Hi, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not enjoying our haunting episodes of The Grave Talks, I invite you to check out our true crime and disaster podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia. Imagine being so involved in the act of murder that it no longer held any emotion for you at all. No shame, no guilt, pleasure, or pain. The same emotion one may have eating an apple. It was the same feeling that Donald Henry Gaskins felt when taking a life, and many lives he did take. This is his story today on The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Donald Henry Pee Wee Gaskins Jr. was an American serial killer, rapist, and cannibal from South Carolina. As a young man, Gaskins was repeatedly arrested for robbery and rape. In 1955, he escaped from prison and found work with a traveling carnival. Gaskins was charged in 1976 with 8 charges of murder after an associate told police officers that he had confessed to multiple murders. Police found 8 buried bodies on his property in Prospect, South Carolina. While awaiting the death sentence in prison, Gaskin killed a fellow inmate on death row with a small explosive. He was put to death on September 6, 1991. More of our story comes from crimelibrary.com. Murder had lost its novelty for Donald Henry Gaskins by the fall of 1980. A prolific killer dubbed the Redneck Charlie Manson in some press accounts. He had claimed his first victim at age 19 in a jailhouse stabbing that got him sentenced to 9 years for manslaughter. Now in middle age, he was serving 9 life terms in South Carolina's state prison, one for each of 9 victims police had recovered. And that tally barely scratched the surface of his crimes. Gaskins was well acquainted with the means of violent death. It held no mysteries. But the crime he had in mind this time was different. Gaskins has never killed a victim on death row. Rudolph Tyner was already marked for death by the state, but he wasn't dying fast enough to please some people. Condemned for the holdup murders of Bill and Myrtle Moon at Murrell's Inlet in Georgetown County, Tyner expected to drag his case out for a decade or more with appeals before he kept his date with the electric chair. He might even beat the rap, since racial aspects of the case, black gunmen, white victims, added weight to his appeals. South Carolina's death penalty statutes had been twice invalidated by Supreme Court rulings in the past 8 years, providing that anything was possible. Tyner's worst problem on death row so far was feeding his insatiable narcotics addiction. Outside the prison walls, Tony Simo schemed to accelerate Tyner's execution. Simo was Myrtle Moon's son by a previous marriage. Bent on avenging his mother's death through prison contacts, he negotiated for the hit, passed along from one convict to the next until he connected with Donald Gaskins. Finally, he had a contact who could guarantee results for a price. A maintenance trustee housed next door to death row, Gaskins had free access to condemned inmates, mending broken pipes, toilets, light fixtures, anything at all. Unknown to Simo, Gaskins also had a tape recorder, capturing their conversations for posterity. A blackmail tool as good as money in the bank if he should ever manage to escape from custody. Gaskins decided poison was the way to go. Befriending Tyner, on his visits to death row, Gaskins began to slip the hold-up killer junk food, marijuana, pills, and heroin. Tyner received the gifts, unquestioning, and begged for more. Simo supplied a box of candy laced with poison, strong enough to kill a horse. but Tyner merely suffered stomach pains. Over the next 12 months, Gaskins repeated the experiment 5 times, spiking his target's food and drugs with ever larger toxic doses, all in vain. Tyner lived on, oblivious to the coincidence between his gifts and stomach-churning trips to the infirmary. 6 strikes and out. Gaskins gave up on poison and decided to construct a bomb. Simo supplied the wiring, hard wire, and C4 plastic explosive, smuggled past distracted guards in hollowed-out heels of cowboy boots. Tyner agreed to let Gaskins connect a homemade intercom between their cells. Gaskins strung wire through prison heating ducts, constructed a receiver for his target from a plastic cup, and packed it with C4. The two men synchronized their watches for a test run on the evening of September 12, 1982. At the appointed hour, Tyner pressed the loaded plastic cup against his ear and spoke to Gaskins on the far side of the wall between their cells. The last thing he heard through the speaker cup before it blew off his head, Gaskins later said, was me laughing. But the last laugh belonged to the jailers. Press reports initially described Tyner's death as suicide, but there are no real secrets in prison. Snitches started talking. Tony Simo soon confessed his role in the plot. A grand jury was impaneled indicting Gaskins and Simo with 2 inmate accessories for murder and conspiracy. The state of South Carolina had failed to execute Donald Gaskins for his previous murders. Now it was prepared to try again. Few observers would agree with Donald Gaskins' claims that he was born special and fortunate on March 13, 1933, in rural Florence County, South Carolina. An illegitimate child who never met his father, Gaskins was known for the first 13 years of his life as Junior Parrot, his mother's maiden name, or simply as Pee-wee. Derisive reference to his size. Gaskins was alternatively beaten and ignored by a series of brutal stepdaddies until his mother finally married one of them in 1943, the union adding 4 half-siblings to the family. The new man of the house beat Gaskins and his older children just for practice, as Pee-wee recalled, but the violence was a part of daily life. Gaskins steadfastly insisted that I certainly weren't in no way what you could ever call abused. Still, something was obviously wrong with Junior Parrot. He was pissed off at girls from his earliest memory, unable to explain the rage coherently. By age 10, he suffered from an onset of lifelong brothersomeness. Described a feeling like a ball of molten lead rolling around in my guts and up my spine into my head. That feeling presaged outbursts of erratic violence, sometimes massaged by forays into criminal activity. Gaskins was clever with his hands and natural around machines and motors. He quit school at age 11 to work on cars at a local garage, teaming with 2 friends named Danny and Marsh in his spare time to form a McGarden gang dubbed the Trouble Trio, starting off with thefts of gasoline from service stations after closing time. They soon graduated to residential burglaries, counseled along with the way by Danny's ex-convict father, buying an old car with the proceeds from their robberies. They ranged farther afield, visiting prostitutes in Charleston and Columbia. Their sexual experiments also included younger boys. But the Trouble Trio made a critical mistake when they gang-raped Marsha's younger sister. Threats and promises of cash failed to secure her silence, and paternal wrath descended on the boys in full force. Danny's father defended him with a shotgun, but Gaskins and Marsh were strung up by their wrists in a barn and whipped bloody by parents wielding a leather strap in relays. Pee-wee's cohorts fled the area as soon as Marsh could walk again, and Gaskins soiled for a while before he met another teenage thief, resuming weekend burglaries. One Saturday in 1946, he was prowling a house when one of these tenants, a girl he knew, surprised him. She was armed with a hatchet, slashing at Gaskins and chasing him outside, where he disarmed her and struck back, gashing her arms and splitting her scalp. The girl survived to identify Gaskins, whereupon he was jailed for assault with a deadly weapon and intent to kill. The judge found him guilty as charged and consigned him to South Carolina Industrial School for Boys until his 18th birthday. Junior Parrot heard his true name for the first time in the courtroom as a sentence was pronounced. So that's where we begin our story today on the dark side of Wikipedia. If you enjoy this program, we greatly appreciate your support over on Patreon, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. There you can get access to our advanced episodes, all commercial free, our full archive, all commercial free as well, and our final chapters exclusively for Darksiders. That's what we call the supporters of the program. It's Tony and Sean with you on today's episode. So thoughts thus far on the rather extreme life of Pee-wee here, Donald Henry Gaskins.
Strike number one, the gentleman went by Pee-wee at a young age. That clearly built up some resentment and bitterness to other humans.
And this is before Pee-wee's Playhouse, too.
So, obviously, if you have a baby right now, and, well, that's almost an honor to be called Pee-wee or Gumby, Hee-haw. But you have a daughter. You have a daughter, Tony.
Yeah.
You have a daughter. This this seems like a fine scholar to hopefully be lucky enough to wed your daughter.
Oh, yeah. This would be a perfect guy, wouldn't he? He just seems like a lovely human being. It's an interesting story because the guy is a piece of shit. But there's some actions that like where he took out the murderer who was on death row. Okay, I you know, sometimes a little vigilantism I'm not that opposed to, but obviously you can't do that and you shouldn't do that. But the other thing here, the parents of the daughter who was gang raped, where they tied him up in the barn and beat the shit out of him. That too, I'm totally cool with. I'm surprised he didn't die, because if someone that happened in my world, they'd be dead. The body would still be hanging from the rafters, and I'd let the cats eat it. So I don't know. He's obviously just someone who has lived a horrible life. Parts of it under his control, parts of it not under his control, parts of it the product of his circumstances. But he's obviously a horrible human being that's very, very damaged.
And what's interesting is many stories we hear about where it is this murder, this murder, this murder. It's all a telling tale from beginning to end of how heinous this individual is. Whereas in the case of old Pee-wee here, he did four terrible things, and then he almost was a good guy where he took out a even worse inmate than himself.
That's the preview. If you want to hear the full episode, be sure to subscribe to Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday.